It's time to make it count. We give professionals the knowledge, mindset, and habits to win at work and at home. I'm Freddie Bennett, Guinness World Record holder, business owner, adventurer, and author, giving you the tools to get unstuck, unshackled, and unleashed. The clock is ticking, so let's go and make it count. Welcome to another show-stopping episode of Make It Count. And today, folks, I have got a real treat for you. I am delighted to welcome Richard Wheeler, Director at Sidekick Accounting. Richard, welcome to Make It Count.
Oh, thanks for having me, Freddie. It's great to be here.
Richard, I'm super excited about this show. I know based on the conversation that we were having just before we hit record, we're going to be giving some absolute pearls of wisdom to the accounting and advisory industry. But to get us started, for anyone that hasn't heard about yourself and Sidekick Accounting, bring us up to speed and tell us a bit about yourself.
I'm surprised, not an accountant, but I've done about 15 years of banking in Canterbury in the South Island with National Bank and ANZ. About 5 years ago, left the bank and started Sidekick Rural with James Swaney and Dave Jessop. So Dave Jessop founded the Sidekick Group about in the mid-2000s, and we've grown to having several branches around the South Island and looking to grow that further. So we're a zero-based accounting firm, so 100% of our clients are on Xero. All of our rural clients are on Figured as well, so we've really got on board with that single ledger principle and streamlined that. So it's really efficient, and we're a couple of days away from in Timaru here being 100% filed for the sixth year in a row since we started. So that'll free us up time to get into the advisory stuff, which makes up about 40% of our revenue, which is key to things going forward.
Amazing. And we're recording this just before the end of the financial year here in New Zealand. And you're looking very calm, Richard. That's always the sign of a well-run, well-oiled accounting firm. There's no panic I'm seeing. There's no huge bags under your eyes.
Yeah, no. I do have the Teams chat on the other screen here. So I'm getting a couple of messages from my accountants as they're getting the last few bits and pieces sorted out. So it's all good, though. We're under control.
Perfect. Love it. Under control. We usually like to be under control here on Make It Count. We're not 100% compliant, but we do our best. Richard, let's go back to the beginning. You mentioned, and I always love it when we have someone who is deeply involved in the accounting industry who isn't a born, bred, qualified accountant on the show. So this makes it especially exciting. But you talked about your career in banking. Was numbers always in your future from an early age? Were you always going to go in that finance industry direction?
Well, I mean, I'm the youngest of four from a sheep and beef farm in the central North Island, and no one had been to uni in my family, and it was something that I just really was keen to do and go and explore. I thought I was going to be an engineer and actually studied engineering at Canterbury until I realised that didn't really spin my wheels. I was a bit more geared up talking to people. But so in the end, I went out to Lincoln, and I wish I could track down the lady who interviewed me. I needed a bit of direction at the time. She said, "Oh, look, yeah, I like farming, but I don't want to be a farmer." And she said, "Oh, if you do these 24 papers, you'll come out with a commerce degree in agriculture with rural valuation, and you'll get a job in the bank, and you get to talk to a lot of farmers." And the rest was history. So numbers turned out to be quite good. I like dealing with people, like dealing with numbers, and you sort of put the two together and you can actually make a bit of progress with people and add some value.
Absolutely. And I think you're totally right. And that's a recurring theme here on Make It Count, that we are a podcast for the numbers industry, but so often the magic happens when you look at the people, not the numbers. And in your banking career, did you find that a very numerical industry was actually more about relationships?
I would describe myself as classically National Bank trained in rural relationship banking. And this is sort of pre-GFC times. And I mean, within 2 weeks, your first day, they fly up to Rotorua for 2 weeks, and you just do intensive sales and negotiation, cycle of motivation, understanding needs. So, you know, that's the key thing. It wasn't about flogging products. It was around being genuinely interested in people, helping them find solutions to their problems, and then going in and delivering it. So that's, I found that quite noble, because the last thing I wanted to do was flog products. I just really wanted to help. So I found that was a really cool way of doing that. And so I suppose that's what we're doing now in the accounting game. Yeah,
absolutely. And I totally agree, by the way. We'll come on to the accounting game in a second. But I think this applies to both the banking industry and to accounting. Sales gets a bad rep sometimes. We think of sales as sleazy and slimy and overly persuasive. But as you say, if you take a genuine interest, if you think about this like almost like being a doctor solving a patient's problem, then it's actually using your skills and your talent to transform the businesses and the lives of your clients. And is that something you started to find as you grew in that career?
Absolutely. Just being, I think the word used a lot these days is being curious. I'm just interested in people. My mother is very good at connecting people together, and she's almost, I'd call it audacity, but she just assumes that, you know, why wouldn't you want to find common ground with someone? And the amount of people that she's brought together over the years is phenomenal. And I think that's kind of rubbed off on me. Yeah. So I think if you're genuinely interested and you want to learn about people and they can feel it, it's, so you're not selling something, because I think sales, the word sales is gross and yucky too. But if you're trying to help people, you're a person trying to help someone else, it's noble.
Definitely. No, I fully agree with that one. And so as you are progressing nobly through your banking career, when did you start to look at accounting? When did you look over the fence and start to wonder if the accounting grass was greener on the other side?
Yeah, well, this will come out later, but the whole concept of like timesheets and keeping track of your time and billing to that and that, it was all kind of seemed quite robotic to me. Whereas, you know, I generally kind of go by where's the most need. Okay, how are we going to apply that and deal with that person and move on to the next one? So somehow the schedule fits in with that. So I didn't find that appealing at all. But later on in my banking career, I was looking after, I think, 4 to 6 managers and about 600 million of lending under my watch. And the banking regulations have changed now. So for us to actually do an annual review and apply funding to clients, we actually, you know, the regulators required us to present some information and independence for that the clients knew what they're doing. And they just weren't getting it. So I remember getting introduced to James Swaney and Rick Thorpe by a commercial manager once, and they were the sidekick guys. And I just said, hey, look, you know, look, there's 400 clients here. Like, if you can help them get them onto zero and figured, you know, that's half the battle for us. All we want to do is just see live information now and be able to forecast. And they came back a week later and said, oh, why don't you do it yourself? So, I was reaching, 40. So most of my family owned businesses and farms and things like that. And I was the dummy that went to university and went and got a job in bank. So it was time to actually go right up. I didn't waste that midlife crisis tension and actually thought, oh, I'm going to have a crack. And we did. Yeah.
I love that midlife crisis tension. I think I probably had about 3 or 4. I think I had my first midlife crisis when I was about 23. So I'm not quite sure how that works. But I think you're right. We sometimes get that feeling that there's more out there and an opportunity to make a bigger difference. But how did you feel after building this successful banking career? And we've had Rick from Sidekick on the podcast, and we know that he can be a persuasive character. And was there any fear in terms of stepping to the unknown and leaving something that was relatively safe and was obviously successful and going on this new adventure?
Yeah, well, I think the thing that terrified me was being that sort of 57-year-old guy who sort of stayed around doing the same thing a bit long and hadn't changed and got a bit cynical and a bit salty and a bit sour and life hadn't turned out quite the way I wanted it. And then being made redundant because things had changed around you with technology. And I could see it. I could see it happening in the banking game. And I didn't think that the headcount of bankers was going to increase over time. It was clearly going to get less with technology. So I thought, no, I'll have a crack. And, you know, there, I saw an opportunity there to, and maybe there was a set in that I had that I could bring. And it's been a bit of a wild ride over the last sort of 5 to 6 years. It's been cool.
I'm sure it has been. And I'd love just to dig into this topic slightly deeper, because I totally empathize and get where you're coming from. And I wonder how many people within both the accounting and the banking industry are recognizing exactly what you described. And they say, look, if I stay here, I'm just going to become a bit bitter, a bit stale. I'm not going to be particularly unhappy, but I'm not going to be loving it either. They feel all those things, but they never make the move. They never take that leap and back themselves to deliver. Do you ever and think, what was it about me? Is there any kind of like secret to why you took the leap when so many other people wouldn't?
No, I think it's a mindset. And I've got to be careful too, because, you know, there are a lot of wonderful bankers out there, and I'm not throwing shade on them. And there will be people that, like the mentor that I hold dear to my heart is a guy called Alan Sewell, and he worked his whole career in the bank. And I've got a huge amount of respect for that guy. And so, but I think it was probably culturally coming from my family. They own businesses and farms and that sort of thing. So I was probably an exception to actually go and work for someone else. So there was always that voice in my head was, when are you going to take a risk and have a crack and try and reach your potential? And I think that's the key thing is I like to, our purpose at Sidekick is to help you be more successful. And those two things align really, really closely. And then I expect my kids to go to school in the morning and try and learn new things. And I thought, righto, when am I going to do that? And the opportunity came and I just had a go.
Definitely. And you make a really important point that I know so many people who have had long, prestigious, impactful careers, sometimes in the same business for 20 or 30 years, which is a rarity these days. And I think you're absolutely right that a lot of people are absolutely cut out for that and make a huge success and a huge difference. But I also believe that sometimes we can't deny our true nature. And if we have this little thought in the back of our heads that says, maybe there's something else, maybe there's a different direction that I'm supposed to go on, then it's always a good thing to listen to it. And as you said earlier, to get curious about it. I want to also talk about, so you've moved, you've had the banking career, you've moved to Sidekick, you've started what you called as a wild ride. How were those first few months in this new environment with new things to learn, new relationships, new clients? How did it all feel?
Yeah, it was I was very lucky to have great people around me. I got, you know, likes of Dave Jessop and James Swaney, and you know, probably he's the guy that should be sitting here talking to you because he's a rarity. He's a guy that's been an auditor, but he can also sell cars, you know, so he can and he's got an abundance mindset. So he's a guy that was ready to take a punt on working with a guy like me who still struggles to this day to fill his timesheet out and go, righto, well, there's a bigger picture here that this guy's going to bring something that the two of us together is going to bring the magic. So the first couple of years, you know, same mistakes that probably everyone does. You have some success and then you get a bit excited and then you've probably gone hire too many people and then and things slow down a bit and then you got to go again and you're like, how are we going to manage the cash flow and where's this going to end? And we've had a lot of challenges, but yeah, we've grown. What have we grown? In 6 years, the business has got about 400 from no standing start with no clients to about 400 client groups and about 1,000 tax returns. So I think we just clicked over a couple of million bucks last year. So it's been fun.
It's an impressive growth story, absolutely. And were there ever any moments when you thought, I've bitten off more than I can chew here, or this just isn't going to be a right fit? Or did you always back yourself from day one, as you say, with that abundance mindset potentially to keep moving forward?
Well, if you've read Michael Hill's book, the Jeweler, he said that not everyone's fortunate enough to have their house burned down at 40 and lose everything and have to start again. And I didn't have that sort of thing happen to me, but you know, to take a 40% pay cut, like that's the problem with leaving the bank, is I had to take a chainsaw to my weekly, fortnightly income. But my wife said, Ryan, she said, oh, like, I've never seen you so happy. So that was the learn. It was like, right, I'm expressing myself. I'm going out and seeing what the market wants. I didn't know what sort of services we were going to deliver. I thought I knew. What I'm doing now is completely different to what I thought on day one. So it was just getting out there, talking to a lot of people and saying, well, what do people need? And then going, oh, how can I help? And how can we sort of package this up and deliver it in a way that people want it and they're going to feel good paying for it rather than it being a grudge purchase, which compliance accounting has historically been.
Definitely. And I love that. And it sounds like rather than saying we've got a suite of products and services, let's try and force some clients into them. Did you more take an approach of let's find out what issues clients are struggling with or potential clients are struggling with and then try and offer them the right solution for them, more of a tailored approach?
Yes. Yeah. Well, we've come from a packaged fixed fee type setup. That's one of the innovations that Dave Jessop set up, 10 to 15 years ago. I sort of moved it more away to, we're still doing the fixed fee stuff, but doing it more of a menu-based sales approach. So, these two farmers might be the same industry and all that sort of thing, but they might want something slightly different. So it was a way of just being able to tailor it for individuals and go from there.
Quick pause to tell you something that I am so excited about. I have launched the Professional Superheroes Mastermind Group. This is where professionals work directly with me to develop the knowledge, habits, and mindset to get unstuck, unshackled, and unleashed at work and at home. There is nothing like this on the planet. It is mind-blowing how much fun this is and just how big a shift people are experiencing. We turn you into the professional superhero that you were always meant to be. If you want more information and to join, then drop me an email at hello@freddiembennett.com. That's hello@FREDDIEM for mindset, BENNETT.com. I can't wait to see you in there. Now, let's get back to the episode. Welcome back. We are speaking to Richard Wheeler at Sidekick Accounting. Richard, we've just been talking about the phenomenal growth of the business, as you say, going out to over 400 client groups from that standing start just a few years ago. Right at the start of this episode, you said that around 40% of your business is now advisory work. And I'd love to explore that advisory journey a bit more, because we know in the accounting industry, there's always this debate around compliance to advisory and that being a big shift in terms of not only selling the work, but delivering it. And how did you get to that 40% advisory? Were there any particular processes or approaches you used?
Oh, well, not being able to do accounts is probably a good start for me. So it's amazing what you can do when you don't have a choice.
Mm.
So I just, I can't go out there. I can sell accounting and get my team to do it. Yeah, that's part of my job. But I'm the youngest of four of a family farm. I've been through family succession on my own family farm. I've worked in rural banking. I've sat around the table with hundreds of clients. So, I'm a shy country boy from the King Country, but you probably can't tell that now. But it took me a while to figure out that, maybe I do know some things and people do want to tap into that and learn about it. And what I realized that not everyone knows and has been through what I've been through. So, So in terms of that advisory piece, I just look at the client and say, okay, what do they have to deal with? I'd noticed that the annual accounts meetings is all historical based, and it was something that's probably 6 to 12 months ago. The client's sitting there going, okay, well, that's great. I'm dealing with stuff now. I need to know what my position is now, and then I need to know what's coming up. So I see their compliance is what's in the rearview mirror, and what I'm dealing with, or what I want our team to be dealing with more of, is what's in the windscreen. And the size of those two pieces of glass probably reflect the opportunity in the industry going forward as technology automates the compliance and makes that rear view mirror get smaller and smaller and smaller. I think the windscreen is getting bigger and bigger. So I think the key thing too is changing the mindset and getting our accountants to go, right, we've prepared the annual accounts. Now, how does this year look? What's the profit going to be there? We're only a couple of months out from that year ending as well. If you've got a May balance date, and then forecasting ahead. So, right, and just tying the past with the future, because that's what the client's got to deal with. So if we can mirror what the client's going through, there's always something we can do for them, always. And yeah, so that's I just got off a couple of annual accounts meetings before this, and we're doing just exactly that. And so just getting the accountants to join those two pieces together.
I love that. And you make a really good point that traditionally accounting is very backward looking in terms of looking in that rearview mirror, just analysing the past. But whilst obviously we need to have that picture of the past, the fact that the windscreen is so much bigger, there's so much more open road ahead of us. And it's a metaphor that I love as well. You can't drive a car forward if you're only looking in the rearview mirror. And it sounds like that's not only a strength for accountants, but also a new opportunity, because as you say yourself, there's always something. I would say there's always a way forward. There's always an opportunity. That the best opportunities for us and for our clients are always ahead of us. And it's about taking the client on that journey.
Yeah, absolutely. And then the next bit is just to I like to sit on those annual accounts meetings with their accountants, and they actually do that complimentary review and talk about where things heading, and then it's an opportunity to kind of, once we've done that discovery, so well, what else can we help you with? So it's, as I said, it comes back to that we can't prescribe until we diagnose, just like an optometrist. And so we've got to ask some questions and build up some credibility and trust, and then they'll respond to that and ask for help.
100%. And I think you say it's about the trust and the credibility. And I think the phrase know, like, trust is often talked about. But I also believe that know, like, and trust is important, but it's also important that you could actually solve a client's problems. And if you look at the wider world, you don't necessarily have to know, like, and trust your doctor. Obviously, trust is important, but that competence, that faith that I have a problem and this professional is going to fix it is a key part of wanting to carry on that journey.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other thing too, if you use that medical analogy, is that we don't have to save everyone. And I think that what I've observed too is that a lot of accountants probably feel like they have to put up with a certain way of doing things. But if you're value-based driven, you understand your purpose, and beautiful thing about being a startup is that you can select like-minded clients, that this is the deal from the start. They know what they're getting themselves in for, and they agree to that. So it just makes it so much better when you start off without any legacy issues, that this is a clean start. This is what we're going to do together. And then you go and do it, and it's great.
Definitely. I think it's a really powerful mindset to say, if you want to guarantee that 100% of your clients are ambitious, bold, fun to work with, progressive, future-facing, all these things, if you want to guarantee 100% of your clients are like that, then you need to be really selective about which clients you bring on board. And how much focus do you put on that client qualification, client selection process?
Oh, it's huge, and you can find out pretty early on. When they start to being pretty price sensitive, and it's just a price check and those sorts of things, you can sort of feel that maybe not. So as long as you have the value conversation and say, okay, well, we'll take on the odd compliance only client, that's fine, but ideally, we're interested in working with people that want to know their cash flow forecast, they want to have a business plan, they want to catch up at least quarterly, probably more frequently than that, and they want to make some real progress. So that makes it fun to come to work. And if they're on board with that, it works out pretty well.
I think that's a great test. Yeah. Is it fun to work with them? I have a client, and it's not the most sophisticated title ever, but he talks about the chug test, and that is, would I be willing to go and chug a beer or drink a beer with this client? And he said in the past, you could have very high value clients, very prestigious clients, but at the end of the day, if they're the sort of client when their name pops up on your phone and you kind of think, oh no, do I have to answer that one? Or, oh God, I've got that meeting with them this week. then they're not going to be a good client. Then you're not going to enjoy the process and bring 100% of your best self to that conversation. So it's always better to qualify those clients out of the process earlier.
Yeah, absolutely. And hey, look, I just want to be clear too, like we're not perfect. Like we make mistakes and we do have the two clients so I had to ask to find another accountant last year because they weren't meeting the agreed standard around getting the information into us. So I think there's one we're going to have to talk to start of April around the same sort of things that you know, we've had to follow up and follow up and follow up and it's not working out. So that's, we've just got to go and deal with that. And not put up with it year to year.
Definitely. I think, as you say, it is about boundaries. And I always believe our lives are the result of what we're prepared to tolerate. And if you, any other accounting firm has a choice, it's I can keep tolerate being treated badly by this client, or we can put a stop to it and show the client the door of opportunity. As our friend Viv Brownrigg at The Gap says, show them the door of opportunity and allow them to go elsewhere. But we have that power to make that decision.
And that's fine. And that's fine too. Like, you know, it's we've learned a lot from Mark and Viv and co. And so triaging your clients into those sort of profitable, you know, okay, and then the loss-making ones and the ones that the team don't enjoy working with because they're hard work to get information out of. I think that, you know, once a year, about this time, is probably a good time to review them. and sometimes it's how we're engaging with them. And I've found that when we address it, it can actually be, if we change how we act with the client and become a bit more direct and clear around what we require from them again or remind them, that they change and improve quite a bit. So it's not always us and it's not always them. It's sometimes it's a combination of the two, right?
It's definitely right. And as a way forward, I find clarity of conversation and clarity of communication always helps, because in so many cases we sometimes don't communicate what we're thinking, what we're feeling, what we're seeing. And that is the beauty of having a powerful and open and honest conversation with the client. But this also applies to team members as well. People can't always hit a certain standard unless they're very much aware of it. And that is the power of communication, both internally and externally.
No, absolutely. Absolutely.
I love it. And talking about teams, as you say, you've grown very much as a business over these last few years. And we've had the shift to more and added increasing amount of advisory work. How have you found it leading and growing a team of accountants? Have you found it straightforward? Are there any unexpected aspects for potential future leaders to be aware of?
Yeah, well, I think, yeah, obviously understanding what makes up a team, and, you know, we do some disc profiling for the team. I thought that was quite useful to understand, for all of us to understand what's the baseline kind of vibe of everyone's personality and behavioural types, with a caveat that it's not a crutch to hide behind. You know, I'm not a detailed person. Does that mean I get away from doing my timesheets? No, it doesn't. So just like if you are a detailed person, it doesn't excuse you from picking up the phone if you need to follow up on some account query. So, and that's one thing I'm extremely proud of is everyone without exception is customer facing in our team, and everyone has to be able to pick up the phone and talk to a person. And, you know, you might need a cup of tea and a lie down afterwards if you're an introvert, but that's fine. That's okay. Yeah, we've all got to do something to bring to the team.
Definitely. I think it is about creating an environment where people are encouraged to step out of their comfort zone, which may mean, as you say, picking up a phone to a client or being involved in a meeting. And I know for someone, I see myself as an introvert. So yeah, hosting a podcast was not the best idea for me. But I think it's about giving people that support to do these things, but making sure they are supported in doing that, because stepping out of your comfort zone can be scary, but with the right support, it can happen, and then people can grow as a result.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember going to Xerocon a few years ago, and they had Nigel Latta there, and he said, "Oh, you know the best way to get over your fear of spiders?" And then he paused and he said, "Well, it's to cover your face in spiders," and then do it again, and then do it again until that reaction fades. And I thought, well, that applies to everyone. Doesn't matter what it is. Yeah. So definitely. When I've just got to work through that. Like timesheets are like that for me. They're my fear of spiders, so to speak.
I think I would prefer to be covered in time sheets than spiders, that's for sure. But yeah, I have to ask as well, you mentioned earlier about the abundance mindset and the power and the importance of it. Do you believe that anyone can develop an abundant mindset, or is it something that you're born with?
I think it can be learnt, but I'm not sure everyone fully understands those three concepts, you know, abundance mentality, optimism and pessimism, and thinking there a certain way. I think we can all learn and come in and out of those different ways of being. Once again, you might need to recover, go have a cup of tea and a lie down if it's not your natural kind of way of doing things, but I think you can play a role for a certain period of time.
Yeah, I agree. And I think there's, that unbridled optimism can be dangerous. I call it, we can get addicted to hopium very easily. And once you're a hopium addict, then that's a dangerous place to be, because you're always just saying there, you're always sat there saying, oh, I hope this is going to be okay. I hope that client's going to be okay. I hope this situation's going to get better. If you're just there optimistically hoping without taking any action, then you're probably not going to see an improvement. But
I think the answer is in the balance. And and I wish, if we all looked at politics in that way, is that what no one way is going to be the best way forever, and the other way is not going to be the best way forever either. That if you look at the answer is in the stylized balance over time, and I think that's true to a lot of things. Yeah.
Definitely. I think it's always interesting as well that something that can feel like a disaster in the second or in the moment, over time, actually just evens out. And I think we've all been in meetings that have been a disaster, or I've been certainly in a few, and you walk out and it feels like the world is falling apart. But then I just think if you take the time scale away, if you look at what's the impact going to be in a week, a month, a year, 10 years, then you start to understand that nothing is really fatal. We can come back from anything, and setbacks that might feel major actually can always be recovered from and can be ironed out. And I think that's the approach of a more realistically abundant mindset.
Yeah, that's right. And I think the longer you do things and the more experience you get, the more evidence and data you've got to kind of back up those things. And I wish, I'm way less risk averse than I was 20 years ago. I was just too shy back then. I was just, I can't do that. Even the fact that I'm sitting here today talking to you and doing this sort of thing, I'd be terrified. I said no. It still haunts me. As a 10-year-old, I was meant to play a leading role play and chickened out, had to get my mate to do it. So I tell my kids around that now, that I'm 45 this year, that still haunts me that I chickened out of doing that. So I'm spend the rest of my life trying to make up for that time when I opted out when I shouldn't have, you know.
Definitely. So. Well, you know what? I actually think today is the day when we can put those demons to bed, because here you are on the world's leading podcast for professional services firms. This is it. You know, we can put that to rest. This is just onwards and upwards from now on.
Oh, thanks. That's pretty. Oh, it's just that all that trauma from back in the day is coming out.
So, exactly.
You know, you're helping me get over it. That's great.
That's what we deal with here on Make It Count, just trauma and trauma release. but coming back to the present day and more accurately to the future, I mean, I'd love to know what is your view on the future of the accounting industry and what the role of an accountant will look like in the years ahead?
Yeah, that's a great question. I was up in Auckland the other day on a panel and I got asked the same thing, and I just said, oh, it's really exciting. I think that accountants the accounting industry is a great place for, you know, as a hub to source information and qualify it and then distribute it in ways that are useful to business owners and people. And at the moment, you know, obviously the majority of that's through tax accounting. I think that's the challenge is how do we use all this data and compliance and actually make it useful to people? And whether that's carbon accounting or, you know, forecasting and applying for finance through banks. And that's a really fast changing scene that at the moment too. And actually, once all the technology kind of automates everything and Xero has a file your annual accounts now button, there's only the humans left to deal with the humans. So what help do the humans need in terms of their planning and succession and just helping them reach their potential? So I think as long as your purpose and values driven and are willing to innovate. And I've got a saying that if you assume that your industry is going to be made obsolete tomorrow, when you get out of bed in the morning, you act like it's the first day and you've got to innovate and you've got to try and stay survive, you'll be okay. I mean, who knows? We might not even be an accounting firm in the next 10 years. I don't know. We'll just keep adjusting, see what the market needs, and then making sure that our team, we've got the right people with the right skill set to be able to adjust to that and deliver a service so that, you know, they're needed and they can house and feed their families and get financial freedom. So that's all we're trying to do. Yeah.
I love that. And on that subject of freedom, I think that's such a powerful way to end. I won't do my Mel Gibson Braveheart speech, but it is all about the power of freedom. And it's freedom not only for yourself, for your firm, but also for your clients and their businesses. And I know everything that you do with Sidekick and with your clients, you are able to give them that financial freedom, the time freedom and the mind freedom to live their best lives and achieve their goals. And that's why it's been amazing to have you on the podcast, Richard, and I've very much enjoyed our conversation. We do obviously have the final surprise here on Make It Count, which is our tradition, and the tradition is the secret question. Now, that is where previous Make It Count guest gets to ask a secret question of the current guest, and it's a secret because I do not know what this question is. So if I pull up my email, basically, and find this... So if you're ready for this, it's quite an interesting question.
Absolutely.
Richard, your secret question is, how do you stay inspired and on track? Also known as, how do you follow your own advice? So how do you stay inspired and on track? And how do you follow your own advice?
That's quite Mark Jenkins from that one. Unless we do walk the talk and get accountability and have people holding us accountable for what we do as a business, we can't go out and preach that to our clients. So that's one thing I've learned is once we do that, we meet up with Mark quarterly, Timaru, we actually met up with in one of John Scholes' coaching groups as well. Yeah, it's unreal how much progress you can make in 12 months. And when you do that, it's really easy to go and talk to clients and say, this stuff works because we've seen it work in our own business and not only our own business, but personally, you know, a bit of accountability goes a long way but it comes with that abundance mentality. The first time I saw John advertise that service, I was like, oh, I don't know about the cost of that, but it's really funny. I've just wasted a couple of years not doing it.
Definitely.
See? So that's the lesson there.
I love that. It's all about walking the accounting and advisory talk. And as you say, if you're prepared to invest in yourself and invest in the right guidance, wisdom, coaching, however you want to call it, then it's like a time machine because you could absolutely fast forward your progress and avoid many of the mistakes that you'd make otherwise. So that is sound advice. And look into the future. I know that Sidekick is in safe hands. Your clients have got a very prosperous future ahead of them. Richard, thanks again. I've really loved this conversation. If people want to reach out to you, to your business and to get in touch, what's the best place to find you?
All the social channels, Facebook, Instagram, and we've got a website, sidekickca.co.nz. Reach out and book an appointment, say good day. We're looking to grow our branches around the South Island as well. So if anyone's keen to talk, we're open. Our model's slightly different to your average one. Our holdings company that owns a license is a not-for-profit, so it's there to serve the individual locally owned branches, not suck out money going the other way. Yeah, so it's quite cool. I call it a socially optimal structure, which is great.
I love that. Socially optimal and absolutely fit for the future. And I know, as I say, Richard, with yourself and Sidekick leading the way, then the future is in safe hands. Thank you so much for being part of Make It Count, Richard. It's been a pleasure to have you on the show. We will have to have you back in the future. But for now, thank you for being part of Make It Count.
Thanks, Freddie. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to another show-stopping episode of Make It Count. I would love it if you could give us a 5-star review, subscribe, and share this podcast with the world. I am on a mission to get professionals unstuck unshackled and unleashed at work and at home. You can join our free Make It Count community. Click the link in the show notes, and you can also follow all of my adventures on Instagram at the Freddie Bennett. Well, for now, we made it count once again. I've been Freddie Bennett. You have been amazing, and I will see you on the other side.